Welcome to ScotusCast, Hospital Reimbursement and Payment Determination Timeline Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On January 22, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Sebelius v. Auburn Regional Medical Center. This case involves Medicare payments to hospitals. The issue is whether a 180-day statutory timeline for filing an appeal with the Provider Reimbursement Review Board from a final Medicare payment determination is subject to equitable tolling, meaning that a court has power to delay the running of the time limit in the interests of fairness. In an opinion delivered by Justice Ginsburg, the court held unanimously that the 180-day period is not jurisdictional and that the Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services lawfully exercised her rulemaking authority in providing a 3-year good cause extension. The court further held, however, that a preemption in favor of equitable tolling did not apply to the good cause extension time limit, and therefore reversed the lower court decision to the contrary. Justice Sotomayor issued a concurring opinion. To discuss the case, we have Evan Young, who is a senior associate at Baker Botts, LLP. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions are those of the speaker. Mr. Young also speaks on his own behalf, and not on behalf of Baker Botts. And now, Mr. Young.
In early December 2012, the Supreme Court heard the case of Sebelius versus Auburn Regional Medical Center. That case involved whether hospitals who were significantly underpaid by the government for inpatient services that they provided could seek to recover the underpayments in administrative proceedings brought many years after the statute and regulations said that such claims may be brought, indeed 10 years too late. The hospital said that they were excused under equitable tolling principles. The courts should permit these particular claims, the hospital said, because the government actually concealed the only information that would have allowed the hospitals even to know of the underpayment at all. The Supreme Court issued its decision in late January and unanimously said to the hospitals, "Too bad. Here is how the system works, and for both your benefit and mine, I'm going to simplify this considerably. Suppose you're a hospital that provides inpatient services to Medicare beneficiaries. If so, you get a set reimbursement amount per patient, regardless of the actual cost. That's the deal, and apparently it averages out. But because Congress recognizes that it costs more to provide services to low-income patients, Congress provides additional amounts for providers based on how many poor Medicaid patients they have served. Hospitals that have a high percentage of people on supplemental Social Security get a much higher reimbursement. But how do hospitals know what they are entitled to? They do not, or at least could not know during all times relevant here. The data was kept by another government entity, which passed it along to the contractors called fiscal intermediaries, which matched up the data and figured out what each hospital's additional reimbursement ought to be. Everything depended on the accuracy of that data, but it was something that the hospitals could not really check. They had to trust, but couldn't verify. The Medicare Act says that Medicare providers can challenge their reimbursements by turning to an administrative body in the Department of Health and Human Services called the Provider Reimbursement Review Board. If the general reimbursement is obviously wrong, or the reimbursement failed to account for certain months or whatever, hospitals could at least challenge that sort of underpayment. The statute says that any challenge has to come within 180 days of getting the reimbursement notice. The Secretary of Health and Human Services has long had a regulation saying that this 180-day period can be extended to 3 years, not just 180 days, so long as there is good cause shown, and even then, not one day more than 3 years. The Secretary has recently tightened the screws on this, incidentally. You'd better be able to show that your data were all lost in a tsunami or burned up in a fire. Almost anything else is not good enough anymore. And even then, 3 years, not one extra day. In this case, the hospitals have alleged that the government purposefully kept hidden the information that would have generated a proper reimbursement. As soon as the hospitals learned of it, and they learned of it from another case, they filed their claim in the administrative body, the board. The board said, "Sorry, we have no reason to doubt you, but we're just a little administrative board, and we can't even order lunch without the secretary's approval. She says jump, we say how high. And she said 3 years only, no matter what. So we can't even consider your claim. Goodbye. The D.C. Circuit ultimately reversed that determination, concluded that this was a matter for equitable tolling. Equitable tolling is the doctrine that allows a claim to be filed late. It stops the clock while something beyond the party's control prevented them from knowing that they had a claim or that they could file it. In a case called Irwin, the Supreme Court has held that equitable tolling generally does apply to suits against the government. So the D.C. Circuit reasoned that this claim against the government, the one brought by the hospitals, also had to be subject to tolling. And the hospital's claim at least seemed like just the sort that would justify such tolling. So it sent the case back. But the Supreme Court granted review. It actually had three different lawyers making three different arguments, because neither the Solicitor General, representing the government, nor the hospitals, were making the argument that the statute actually limited these administrative protests to being filed 180 days after the initial determination. The government defended the secretary's right to extend it up to 3 years, and the hospitals agreed with that, but also wanted that time to be extended even further if equitable tolling principles so justified it. The Supreme Court appointed Harvard professor John Manning, therefore, as an amicus to argue that the Medicare Act itself mandated neither of those results, but that the statute demanded instead a strict 180-day limit, no exceptions, no excuses. Professor Manning briefed and argued that point, and he also said that if he were to be wrong about that primary point, then the hospitals should win, because if the limitation was not jurisdictional, then the general presumption of equitable tolling indeed should be applied. In a unanimous opinion written by Justice Ginsburg, the Supreme Court rejected everything Professor Manning had to say. First, the court expanded upon its recent jurisprudence that seeks to distinguish jurisdictional rules from claims processing rules. If a rule is jurisdictional, then it can be raised at any time, and it absolutely cuts off the power of a court. A finding that a limit, such as a filing deadline, is jurisdictional is very much disfavored these days, and the court requires a clear statement, not magic words, but a clear statement that Congress intends a jurisdictional consequence. Absent such a clear statement, the court assumes that a rule is not jurisdictional. It is something that the other party can insist upon if it raises the matter in the lower courts or administrative tribunal, but if not, those deadlines or other rules can be waived or forfeited. So the initial question is whether this 180-day rule is jurisdictional. The main effect of such a holding would be to kiss goodbye to the Secretary's 3-year good cause extension. Professor Manning's main argument was that the 180-day limit was jurisdictional, but the Supreme Court said that it was not. The language was not clearly jurisdictional, and although Professor Manning raised some good arguments, none of them amounted to what, to the court at least, constituted a clear statement. The lesson here is that the Supreme Court really means it. You can have great arguments or logic, but the court is going to bend pretty far backward before it will allow a litigant to impute jurisdictional meaning to a statutory time limit for filing a claim of any sort. Second, the court turned to the question of whether equitable tolling was required. Professor Manning had said, if you disagree with me about jurisdiction, as the court in fact did, then you have to find that the hospitals win because there is a presumption of equitable tolling. And the court said, wrong again. The most important basis for its decision was that this was an administrative proceeding, not one brought in court. All of its cases about equitable tolling have thus far involved suits filed in federal courts. Here, administrative law takes over. There are unique reasons that agencies might need to have tight and even inflexible rules to keep the gears moving. The standard is the same arbitrary and capricious standard that governs most other review of administrative actions. The court said it had to uphold the secretary's judgment so long as it was a permissible construction of the statute, even if the court itself might have seen things differently. Here, however, the court suggested that not only did it have that basis for upholding the secretary as not arbitrary and capricious, but in fact that the secretary probably knew what she was doing and that Congress indeed had approved of what she was doing. Congress has amended the very statutory provision providing for review by the board 6 times since 1974, and it never has expressed any disapproval of the rigid 3-year grace period which was then enacted. Indeed, Congress has never even modified the particular text within that statutory section about the 180-day general requirement in any way. While claims of congressional acquiescence often are meritless and are easily disposed of by the court, the court suggested that this case is a pretty good example of when congressional acquiescence can be shown. Claims brought by individuals, as opposed to sophisticated, well-represented hospitals who are perfectly able to fend for themselves, might be different. The court hinted at this point, but Justice Sotomayor filed a brief concurring opinion saying, please don't understand our opinion to mean that there can never be equitable tolling in any administrative context at all. It just doesn't fit here for these hospitals in this statute. Of course, the hospitals say that, yes, we're sophisticated, and yes, we have good legal counsel, but they say no amount of sophistication and no amount of legal help could have told us that the government was systematically underpaying us. The government had the data, and we didn't. We had to trust them. And now they're telling us, look, Flounder, you messed up. You trusted us. That may well be true. It's possible that an injustice has been allowed to stand. The court never really addresses it. The bottom line is just this. Too bad. We have to make sure that the administrative state keeps on trucking. And that's all for Sebelius versus Auburn Regional Medical Center.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.